Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paul Waldman, who is a contributing editor for the American Prospect and the author of Being Right Is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Waldman.
Thank you.
And you've been covering the Benghazi scandal, which is an evergreen kept alive largely by the Republicans. I think at this point there may have been up to 8 inquiries, at least 5 that I know of in terms of Senate and House committees. And now they're heading, it looks as though the Democrats, who were thinking about boycotting this special select committee that Boehner has appointed, looks like they're joining it. And so what's your sense? Even they're joining, it's 5-7. Not only is the whole thing, in a sense, stacked against the Democrats, so is the committee itself. So what's your understanding of why they decided to join in?
Well, I guess they thought that it would be better for them to have voices who were on there who could ask the kinds of questions that they want asked and be a counter to the Republicans. And obviously the political risk is that if it was just a partisan Republican enterprise, that it might get much less attention. It's also interesting that the 5 people that Nancy Pelosi announced that she was going to appoint are among the people who have participated in some of these investigations up until now, and people who are pretty serious members of Congress, some of them on the Armed Services Committee, the Intelligence Committee. And so it isn't she could have appointed people who were sort of more bombastic and do a better job of yelling at the cameras. You know, there were people who wanted Alan Grayson, the congressman from Florida, who often appears on television doing just that. There were people who wanted him to be on the committee, but he was not among the people that she appointed. So it does appear that their court's sort of going to take the high road, if you want to think about it that way, to try to put some serious people on there and be a counter to the Republicans and whatever they whatever they're saying. And it does, you know, I think that most of us who have followed this start with the presumption that there isn't really much more to be found out. But if you look at Trey Gowdy, who is the person who's going to be leading the committee, he is a former prosecutor, and it's interesting, if you go to YouTube, there's all kinds of videos of him sort of shouting at witnesses in congressional hearings, and this is obviously something that has made him very popular with a certain kind of conservative who likes to see Obama administration officials get yelled at by a Republican. And, you know, he's already talked about this as a trial, as though he's a prosecutor and not someone whose job is to investigate and uncover the truth, but to convict the person on the other side. So, you know, I am skeptical that anything new is going to come out of this that we haven't already found out from all of the committees that have come before, and it's going to be mostly a media event.
Well, it seems, Paul Waldman, that the fact that Nancy Pelosi is, I think, the only statements I can recall that she's really made, or at least the sound bites that came out of her comments regarding whether or not to join this committee, was that she sort of said that Darrell Issa had become damaged goods and they were merely moving it to some other venue under Trey Gowdy. And so would that be connected to her choice of having the ranking Democrat on the committee, Representative Elijah Cummings, who's, of course, been the ranking member on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee that Darrell Issa chairs, and he himself has been a victim of Darrell Issa's grandstanding and cutting off the microphone and those kind of theatrics and bullying, which the Democrats were afraid this committee would engage in.
Yeah, it may be. You know, I assume that the people that she picked are those who she thinks, you know, already have a good base of knowledge about this matter and are going to be able to stand up to that sort of thing. And it's true that Darrell Issa is damaged goods. I mean, if I were a Republican and I watched the last couple of years as he has been sort of the Obama administration's chief prosecutor, I would be pretty disappointed because he's really been just unbelievably incompetent about it. Every time he, you know, says leaks something to the press that there's going to be some dramatic revelation, it turns out that there is no dramatic revelation. He keeps trying to pin something on them, and nothing ever seems to stick. And so, you know, it's not really surprising that this thing, which is frankly really important to the Republican base, is getting turned over to someone else. And I think that's a lot of what's going on here. You know, they need to sort of keep feeding this beast of their own base that demands that, you know, that something be done to get the Obama administration, even if they can't quite find the impeachable offense. And Benghazi has been built up into this thing that's so incredibly important to a lot of those extremely conservative Republicans, that it's something that they just kind of have to keep hitting on, even if I'm sure if you could actually get them to be candid, there aren't very many Republicans in Congress who actually think there's anything there, that yes, it was a terrible tragedy, and yes, there are lessons that can be learned about security at embassies and consulates, but, you know, the malfeasance, the criminal behavior that they were hoping they would find, it just didn't happen. And so the worst thing that they can say is that there were talking points that were released that may not have, you know, may have been a little misleading, and, you know, that's the crime, the talking points. It's sort of absurd. But they've built it up into something where they cannot deny their base, you know, the more talk about Benghazi and more hearings, and so if nothing else, this will serve to sort of keep them at bay.
Again, I'm speaking with Paul Waldman, who's a contributing editor for The American Prospect and the author of Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. So the fact that that they've the subtext has often been suggested, and I don't think it's anything of a stretch to recognize that this is also this jihad over this Republican jihad over Benghazi is also an effort to dirty up Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee in 2016 for president. And to that extent, I'm kind of astounded at what they're doing, because there is a real scandal in Libya. You know, NATO and the United States bombed the hell out of that country to get rid of Gaddafi, and then they just walked away and left it in chaos. And now we are at a point now where it's poised on the brink of civil war, with a general trying to organize a Libyan national army, which was decimated by NATO and the U.S. There were no army left in place. There was no police left in place. The Islamist militias took over, and they were the very militias that were involved in killing the ambassador and the SEALs in Benghazi. And this general has actually bombed the very Islamist militia group that have been blamed for the attack. But they're not getting any help from anywhere. In fact, the jihadis are getting help from Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia. So to my mind, that's the real scandal. And yet they're focusing on this dead-end cul-de-sac, beating a dead horse over Benghazi, when they could really make a strong case against the United States and, by extension, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, you would think, and I'm sure that most Republicans in Congress don't even know the barest facts about what's actually going on there. You know, this is the road that they went down, and they're convinced sincerely that President Obama and Hillary Clinton and everyone who works for them are corrupt to the core. And if they just keep looking, they will find some kind of smoking gun that shows how corrupt they really are. And so to, you know, undertake some kind of a complex investigation of conditions there now, where they might have to say what they might have done in the circumstances, that's something that I think is probably doesn't have a lot of appeal for Republicans in Congress. So, as you said, they're just going to keep beating this dead horse because it's the horse that's right in front of them.
Well, but it seems like they can't tell the difference between government incompetence and government conspiracy.
Yeah, I think you're right when it comes to a government that they don't like. And, you know, this is something that I think we're all prone to a certain extent, that we look at the people from the other party, people who we disagree with, and say that their motives must always be bad, that if something went wrong, it could only have been from, from something sinister that they did. You know, it's a version of what they call the fundamental attribution error, you know, which says that, you know, if I cut someone off in traffic, it was because I just made a mistake or didn't see them, whereas if I see someone else cut someone off in traffic, I think it's because they're just inherently bad people, and that's why they did that. And there's something similar that happens in politics where, you know, we look at the administration of the other party and think that everything that they do is sinister, and they have evil intentions for all of their actions, and if something goes wrong, it can only be because of some sort of criminal malfeasance on the part of those people whom we dislike so much. Whereas when the same things happen in an administration of our own party, the people we like, you know, we are willing to grant that they that, you know, it was a mistake or that they weren't trying to do something awful, but things just went wrong. And I think that in this case, Republicans are so convinced that President Obama and Hillary Clinton, whom, you know, they've hated for 20 years, that they're so morally corrupt that that there must be something there. And if they just keep digging, that they'll uncover it.
So what's your sense then, Paul Wolman, of this how this committee is going to proceed under the chairmanship of Trey Gowdy, who is a former prosecutor and has already indicated that he thinks that there's a real smoking gun? One of the most amusing lines I ever heard was after this last email was discovered that involved talking points, just standard operating procedure for the National Security Council's giving the talking points to a government official about to meet the press. But they've managed to, they came forth and said, this is the closest thing we have to a smoking gun. So presumably Gowdy will be getting closer and closer to the smoking gun, whether in reality or in his imagination. But will he be as much of a bully as ISA? In other words, my understanding is that they don't have a deal where both the Democrats and the Republicans have to sign off on subpoenas. The Republicans can therefore ambush the Democrats with witnesses. So are they walking into a line stand, even though you've got really good people on this, including a decorated American war veteran, Tammy Duckworth? At the same time, if the deck is stacked against you and the game is rigged, you're not going to come out looking too good.
Well, ultimately, it's going to be a matter of what kind of evidence there is and what they actually uncover. And, you know, they can issue all the subpoenas that they like, but if they can't come up with anything that anybody did wrong, then they're not going to be able to, you know, mount the kind of case that they want. And so I imagine what's going to happen is that for the first couple of times that they hold these hearings, it's going to get a lot of attention and people are going to look at it and see that there's really not much there. Now, it's always possible that they'll uncover something horrible that somebody did. That, you know, they used to think that there was a stand-down order, that someone was told not to go and save the people there, and that turned out not to have never happened. But maybe there is something there. Who knows? But everything that we know up until now suggests that there isn't, and I think that after a couple of these sessions where there is no smoking gun, there's no dramatic revelation, People are going to stop paying attention and it's going to kind of fizzle out. And that would be my prediction as to what will happen.
So in terms of the Democrats making this decision, do you think, can you predict one way or the other, Paul, whether or not they would have made a stronger case by just boycotting it and isolating them and making it look like, you know, a partisan sort of debating society talking to themselves?
Yeah, I think you probably could have said strategically that would have been better, assuming that nothing comes out. I think if there is something important that we learn, and the Democrats had boycotted, then they would be the ones who would look unreasonable and partisan. But if there's nothing there, then there doesn't seem to be much reason to participate. But, you know, it's possible that if we assume, let's say that it does end up sort of fizzling out, the Democrats can say, you know, we gave it a shot, we put serious people on there, and we tried to participate to the best we could, and what came out of it was nothing. And so at least they look like they took the high road and, you know, tried to do the best job that they could of being as accommodating as possible. And that may be what ends up happening in the end.
Well, I just wonder, though, whether this, as I mentioned earlier, whether Trey Gowdy is going to be like ISA, where, you know, he cuts off their mics, he stacks the decks, he rigs it so that he blindsides them as often as he can because they don't have subpoena power, etc. I mean, that, you know, there's a certain zealotry that's amongst these people, and he comes out of that Tea Party wing. I don't know whether he's motivated in the same way that ISA is. I think ISA is more of an ambitious politician into grandstanding. But this other guy, Gowdy, seems to be a true believer. So I guess it remains to be seen how rampantly partisan he's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, ultimately, I think, as I said, the facts are going to be what dictate it. And if there's anything there to grandstand about, then that'll be meaningful. And if there's nothing and it's just sort of empty grandstanding, then, you know, that will become clear as well.
Well, Paul Waldman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Paul Waldman, who's a contributing editor for The American Prospect and the author of Being Right Is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.